If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
Before we get to today's show, have you seen the amazing containers that cannabis and hemp products come in these days? I'm talking about those amazing joint tubes you carry around in your pocket or the cool containers edible products come in now. There's a revolution in packaging happening around the cannabis industry. In fact, it's already happened. Our new sponsor, KushCo, is largely responsible for incredible innovations that are so useful, well, we take them for granted. But these packages have to comply with strict guidelines, be childproof, and all other sorts of regulations. Kush is on top of that. I guess they are really good at what they do because they've sold over a billion units of stuff to more than 5,000 legally operated medical and adult use dispensaries, growers, and producers across North America, South America, and Europe. Check out their site at kushco.com/podcast for more information. The show starts now.
We'll be right back.
You've been listening to the Jimmy Smith instrumental Root Down into the James Brown classic Soul Power from Star Kitchen's performance at the FTC Stage 1, January 15th, 2019, in Connecticut. Wow, what a jam. We've all been listening to the Disco Biscuits forever, and like you, we always keep an eye out for Mark Brownstein's work, since we appreciate his work on bass and his similar taste in music. So when we read that he started this new project called Star Kitchen, a funk-type thing, we were jonesing to hear exactly what was going on. Luckily, there is some music floating around, and we're fortunate that tapers like Eric McRoberts, who make awesome live recordings, was also at the FTC Stage 1 in Fairfield, Connecticut, to catch Star Kitchen last week. Once we heard the music, we had to get Brownie on the line to ask all about Star Kitchen. He obliged to come on and chat, and our conversation started when I asked him just how the whole thing got going.
Well, everything starts with, you know, a light bulb. You know, there's always a moment of inspiration. And for Star Kitchen, I've been going to Jazz Fest every year for the last bunch of years. I've been going on jam cruise pretty much every year or every other year for the last, you know, decade or so. And in doing that, I've been heavily, you know, exposed to the New Orleans style of funk music and just in general, funk and jazz across the spectrum. And that is where my head was at, you know, musically. 2 or 3 years ago, my thought was, I just want to learn how to play funk music, soul music, like, you know, and dig in deep on the body of songs that, you know, is considered standard, so that I just had it, you know, had all of the different licks and all of the different, you know, kind of grooves that people play in that world, which didn't come naturally to me, but musically, that's what I listened to. And, you know, I thought to myself, it'd be nice to have a band that I don't have to like fit a square into a round hole. You know, I'm not trying to jam something down people's throats that doesn't exactly fit perfectly. And sometimes when I go on jam cruise, although Electron has had some huge shows on jam cruise, some really cool stuff. The Pink Floyd thing that we did a couple of years ago, we've really like the jam cruise community has embraced us and our music and what we do. I just thought to myself, it would be really cool to have something that really does fit into jam cruise, to Jazz Fest, you know, into the community of people that you're speaking about. Sort of an older crowd, a little bit is my friends. I travel around with my friends that are in their 40s and early 50s. We travel around to different music events all the time. And we go and see all of this different music. And, you know, it just, for me, it was just inspiration. We're at home and we're listening to Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, and we listen to that a lot. My wife got into the Dap Kings because she was a huge Amy Winehouse fan. And so then we got into Sharon Jones, and that music is just constantly playing in our house. 2 years ago, I started to dig deep into like Aretha and her catalog and James Brown and playing along with Fred, Bernard Purdy, you know, and learning those grooves. And that's where we started with Star Kitchen. That was just the idea, was we're going to start with the classic songs. So in terms of how the band ended up happening, I wanted to do this. It's fine to want to do something, but knowing how to do it or actually doing it are two very different things. And getting from wanting to start a funk band, but not knowing how or not really knowing those musicians that well, and being where I am right now is a really interesting story, because it happened in the most unlikely manner. And it was by chance, I think, that I ended up with these particular musicians. And so the story goes like this. I walked into my house one day, right around this time, it was like 3:30, and my son was with a couple of friends, and one of them looks at me and he says, "I hear you're in a band." And I was like, "Yeah, I'm in a band." Disco Biscuits. And he's like, "My dad's in a band too." And my first reaction sort of was like, "Everybody's dad's in a band." You know, that was kind of like a weird thing. Like, "My dad's in a band." Like, "Yes, I'm sure your dad's band is very good." You know? So then I just sort of out of friendliness and, you know, just said, "What's your dad's name and what's your dad's band?" And he said, "Oh, my dad is, he's on tour right now with Eric Krasno band." And I was like, "Excuse me, what does your dad play? What is this? What's going on here?" And he goes, "My dad plays guitar." And I'm like, "Is your dad Eric Krasno?" And he was like, Eric Krasno doesn't have kids and he plays guitar in Eric Krasno band.
Right.
And he's like, "No, my dad's name is Danny Mayer. He's like the other guitarist in Eric Krasno band." And I was like, "Huh, I didn't know there was, like, I don't really know Eric Krasno band, but, your dad must be really good at guitar if Eric Krasno hired him." You know, that's kind of what I'm thinking to myself, right, is damn. And he was like, "Yeah, he played with Alan Evans Trio too. He does a lot of different bands." And I was like, "Man, I got to meet this kid's dad." Right.
Right. Right.
So a couple of weeks later, I went to this kid was playing in a Little League game, and all of the boys, my son and his friends and their dads all wanted to go support this kid's Little League game. So we went down to the Little League game that this dude was playing in, and the dad was sitting on the bench, and I looked over, I saw his hat, and I was like, "This must be the dad," you know?
Right.
And I walked right over to him and was like, "Hey, are you Jaden's dad, Danny?" And he's like, "Yes." And I was like, "I'm Zach's dad, Mark. You know, I hear you play in Eric Krasno's band and Alan Evans Trio." And he's like, "Yeah." And I was like, we should start a band. I mean, I didn't even think twice about it. First of all, most people would want to hear what the guy sounds like before they ask to start a band.
Right.
But the reality was, he was fully vetted as far as I was concerned. He plays with Jen Hartsworth. He plays with Eric Krasno. He plays with Alan Evans. He's in organ trios. I want to start like an organ trio style jazz funk band, but with a bass player, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
And this dude's sitting right there. So I just kind of looked at it as if it was one of those situations where the universe was just kind of delivering what I needed right at the time that I needed it. And I was like, "Let's start a band." And he was like, "Dude, let's do it." And that was how the band started. And awesome. And that was 2 years ago in the spring of 2018. That was the spring of 2017. And so for like 4 months, we talked about how we were going
to
start a band.
Wait, I have to ask you a question. Did he say, "Yeah, sure, you're in a band. What band are you in?" Like, did he ask you about your chops, or did he already know who Mark Brownstein was?
So by the time that I got there,
okay,
he knew what band I was in. And
got it.
I think, like, you know, I walked over and was like, "Hey, I'm Mark from the Biscuits," you know, and
right.
was like, "Oh, cool." And I was like, "Do you want to start a band?" I told him too, my inspiration. I'm like, "Dude, I want to start a funk band. I want to start something in the vein of like the Dap Kings. Like, I don't know, like Simon Pospisch, do you know him, Spangle?"
Yeah.
He once told me, "Always start by copying something exact," which is, by the way, almost impossible for most people to do.
Right.
So, you know, some people can actually mimic things exactly, but if you're not one of those people, the best place to start is by trying to copy something exact.
Right.
And then you'll end up in your own spot naturally by being you, you know? But it's good to start with a focused place to a goal musically. So we, you know, I told them, "I'm really into the Great Boy All-Stars. I'm really into the Dap Kings. I want to play something that's like, I want to get like the instruments that sound like that and just kind of go down that road and learn that music and, you know, kind of do something in the vein of Soul Live, you know, like that's kind of where my head is at." And he was like, "Dude, that's my world. I mean, I'm like in the guitarist for the Soul Live side project." And I was like, "Yeah, I know. This is, seems very good in terms of you being right here, us living in the same neighborhood, your tour is ending." He's like, "Dude, I have nothing going on right now. My tour is ending.
Awesome.
He's like, this is perfect. So then he said, do you know Rob Marsher? And I do know Rob Marsher. I've known him for 20-something years. Like, when the Disco Biscuits were starting out, we played at the Middle East with Moon Bootlover.
Right.
In like 1997. And this was in Boston. And this band, Roadside Attraction, was the first of three. And they were like high school kids. And the keyboard player was Rob Marsher. And he made, like, we've had hundreds of first of three bands open for us over the years. Yeah. And I couldn't tell you 10 people's names from them. But Rob Marsher made a huge impression on us that night. He had a song called Jacinda that was really catchy. And it was just like cute that these high school kids were like playing music at them. And we never forgot him. Then when Addison Groove Project popped back up, we were like, oh my God, that's the Jacinda kid. And then they were on the scene for many years. We played with them, obviously, a lot of times. And then he popped back up with Modest Yahoo. We played together with Modest Yahoo after Fare Thee Well. We did a Modest Yahoo gig, like, late night at City Winery in Chicago, and he was the keyboard player. And their bass player was Chu from North Mississippi All-Stars, and He somehow couldn't make it. And I was supposed to sit in, and they called me at, like, 10 in the morning, and we're like, can you learn, like, you know, 7 or 8 like Bob Marley songs, you know, reggae songs, Modest Yahoo songs. And I was like, all right, well, I was here for Fare Thee Well, but like, I guess I'll do that. And I did it. And, you know, Marsha and I had a good chemistry there as well. And So Danny said, you know, Rob Marsha. And I was like, yeah, I know him very well. And he was like, well, Rob Marsha just moved to Philly. He's like, just moved here. And he basically was like, that's who I would like to have play keyboards. He's an encyclopedia of funk music. Like, he gets a really good tone. And what I think the phrase he said was, playing along with Rob Marsher is like getting it, like having a warm blanket wrapped around you at all times.
Right.
And I was like, huh, that's a great description. So we didn't audition him. We just called him and we're like, you want to join this band with us? And he was like, he was like, non-committal. He was like, let's get together, you know, and we'll get together and see what happens. And then we started auditioning drummers, and you know, that was like the hardest part, was knowing when it was right was hard, because any of the drummers would have been great for what I wanted to do at the time.
Yeah.
All of them could have accomplished perfectly what my vision was then. But my vision then kind of sucked a little bit. You know, that's the truth now looking back. It's just what Simon said. You got to start by trying to copy something and it won't end up there. Mm-hmm. But like, it could have ended up there. But if it did end up there, it would have been a subpar version of that, because we're not that, like, you know what? And that still exists. And there's masters playing this music. Soul Live and Grey Boy and all these guys are out there doing it. Right. So they don't need me. They don't need me coming out and trying to copy exactly what they do. So we just kept trying out drummers. And when we met Marlon, after like one song, like Rob stopped right at the end. Rob, by the way, who hasn't even said that he's definitely in this band at the point, kind of just hanging with us.
Yeah.
Rob stops, the whole presses, and he's like, hey man, so you want, and he's quiet too, he's like, so you available, you want to do this thing with us? And I was like, whoa, Rob's making the call right here. Like, no, like, meeting, no, like, and to me, that's all I needed to hear. Because Rob's the guy who knows the most about this music in the room. He's the guy who really is an expert in all things funk and soul. You name a song, and he sits down and starts playing it. It's not like we don't need to wait for Rob to learn the songs. He's there teaching us how everything goes.
Right.
No, it's a G6-9 with a 13, you know, like, he's just got it all. He knows, he's when I say encyclopedia, for real.
Yeah.
And so Rob is like, stops Marlon and is like, are you in? And Marlon, it's like a weird moment where you're like, are you auditioning people? Or you're like, are you getting auditioned? Do you know what I mean?
Right, right, yeah.
Marlon is like, he plays with Lauryn Hill. Yeah. He plays with John Legend. He plays with some really badass people, but he's looking for a gig at this moment too. And so we're all kind of in that weird space where, you know, auditioning people's a fucking weird thing to do. It's like because maybe they don't want to do it. Like, they're showing up, but like, it's just like, there's, I've never really gone through this process. When we auditioned drummers for the Disco Biscuits, definitively every one of those people knew what they were auditioning for and wanted the job.
Right.
This was, you're auditioning for a concept.
Right.
You know, you're auditioning for a band that doesn't know any songs, hasn't written any music, and, you know, like, what we have is management, agents, marketing people. Like, we're a new band with nothing except a full, you know, all the foundation that you need to launch a new project besides the music. So a lot of bands start with an album. You know, a lot of people write an album and then they go get their band. We're just conceptually trying to start doing something new. So Marlon's like, okay, cool. I guess I'll do this. And so then we started out. We start learning songs. We start rehearsing. So the idea behind this...
Go ahead. Because you're the bass player in the band, it's kind of important that you dig what the drummer's doing, because, I mean, you're the rhythm section. So were you down with Marlon, even though Rob was, or was it kind of like, I'll make this work because Rob thinks it's cool?
No, so here's the deal. All of the guys were great, but they were all great, and I think probably the way that I have the drummers I've played with before, like one of the other drummers probably would have been the more comfortable for me at the time.
Right.
But that wouldn't, like, it's such a good question that you're asking. I probably would have been more comfortable with one of the other dudes right off the bat, because Marlon plays slower.
Mm-hmm.
And Marlon plays more on like a straight hip hop groove a lot of the time, which we didn't know was going to happen at that moment.
Right.
But that's like the groove, that hip hop groove came directly out of, you know, the funk grooves from the 10 and 20 years before mm-hmm. hip hop was invented. And all of the songs have been flipped into hip hop songs. So there were times when we were starting out where we did a rehearsal or two that were kind of rough. Like, you know, Marlon had to learn what we were doing too, because now he's in a jam band, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yo, when we get to the jam, just stay in your groove and don't do anything different for 10 minutes. And he's like, 10 minutes? At the time, he was like, yo, dude, we're never playing anything for 10 minutes. He told me that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. Like, you know, of course, like, you look at our stuff and every jam is like 16 minutes long this point. But totally. Like, then it was like new concept to him that we were just going to do nothing. And I was like, I really want to do minimalist stuff. Like, I want to, like, you know, I'm into Phish, and Phish in their funk jams, they're very minimalist, you know, kind of, everybody sits back and just kind of plays rhythm, and they'll do that for 5-7 minutes, and everyone dances really hard. As long as the groove is there, it's just a dance party. It's not about any one player, and I'm trying to like bring that ethos in, but without guys who sound like they are in Phish, you know, like we're still influenced by the influences, you know, the Grateful Dead and Phish. And I play these guys some stuff from Jerry Garcia Band and be like, listen to how this funk jam goes in Jerry Garcia's world. You know, listen to how this funk jam goes in Phish's world.
Right.
Like, we can play it how we play it, but like the concept is the same, which is that we're going to stretch the fuck out of all of this stuff. We're going to stretch it out. So at first, I think there were moments where Marlon was like, whoa, what are these guys doing? And even there were days where we, you know, like, he'll find this out later. There were days where me and Danny were like, is Marlon digging what we're doing right now? Like, you know, where we're like, and it's funny because when we got to our first show as Electric Forest, I saw like a whole different side of Marlon. Like, he opened up, like, he got into this festival, and, you know, within like 20 minutes, it was like he had like a hippie hat on and his shirt was off. He was like running through the forest, like, this is amazing, you know?
Right.
And I was like, oh man. And we played the show and he brought this, he stopped me if you ever need to stop me.
But no, no, it's
he,
good.
He brought, so, okay. So he brought this electronic drum pad with him that we had never practiced with. We've now been practicing from March to July once a week, every week, just to learn 10 songs and learn how to jam on them and learn how to play them well enough to play in Electric Forest. And I show up and he's got this electronic drum pad. And it was like, I started to have a little bit of resistance in my head. I'm like, oh my God, what the fuck is going on here? Like, I kind of like wanted to do this thing that was going to be super authentic.
Right.
Now there's electronic drums and we've never even practiced with them. And instead of bugging out or saying anything, I kind of just practiced, overcoming my own inner resistance and was like, I don't know what's going to happen here. I have to be open-minded. This is, I'm not going to tell Marlon not to do something that he wants to do. We're a band. So he sets this thing up and he's like, I hope you don't mind. I brought this thing, you know? And in the middle of living in the city, all of a sudden he goes over to the pad and starts hitting like a clap and playing like a hip hop groove under it. And it was like amazing.
Yeah.
It was like all of a sudden it was like, I describe it like you have, you're at the eye doctor, right? And the dude's like, I use this analogy occasionally where like you're at the eye doctor and the guy's like, which one is better? And he slides the lens down and it's like, this one's like super blurry. And then he slides one down and everything comes into focus. For me, right at that moment, everything came into focus. It was like, okay, that's cool. That's different. That's authentic because now Marlon is being Marlon. And then like after the show, we got a recording. It took us like 3 months to get the recording. So now it's like September.
Yeah.
We're just coming back from our summer break. We take 2 months off. We're just coming back into September. We want to start getting ready for our first tour in November. And I sat the guys down and I was like, here's the recording. What's going on in this like 2 minute period, you know?
Yeah.
And Marlon's like, yeah, man, like I'm sorry. I just wanted to like, you know, feel it out. And I'm like, bro, this is it. This is the sound. Like for me, you have carte blanche, like with your Roland thing, you know, I love the way this sounds. I love how you're putting in like a hip hop beat on top of what we're doing, and I want to just play the song regular. Like, I don't want to try to like make a remix. It's already enough of a remix. Then we start working with the Roland thing at practice. And now we're practicing with this thing and we roll around to our first set of shows. And I remember coming off stage in Ardmore and one of my closest friends who helped me launch this project, this guy, Andy Hurwitz, comes up to me and he's like, dude, what the fuck? He's like, this is like, you're like live remixing these songs. It's not even like cover songs. They're like live remixes. Like the way Marlon's doing this.
It's all good.
Yeah, you know, and I was like, man, that's what it is. That's what Star Kitchen is. And so we basically spent that 2 months getting ready for those four shows. And then that was it, you know, like we hit the road and that's when the buzz really started, you know, cause at Electric Forest there, it was just like a kind of insulated experience where we're now just sort of playing for these 400 or 500 people up in the middle of Michigan. It's not being recorded. We didn't have any way to turn around and put out any content on it. We didn't have anything.
Right.
It was just this, it's like if a band plays in the woods, you know, and only 400 people are there to hear it. Does anybody ever get to know that it happened?
Right.
And so, you know, it was all about how do we turn what we're doing here these four nights in November into something that people nationally and internationally are going to find out about, you know, because it's so easy at this point with NugsNet. And, you know, especially you're going to play at the Ardmore Music Hall. Then you have Nugs that is completely wired in there. And they're hitting me up the whole week. Like, you have to webcast this. You have to webcast it. And I'm like, man, I don't even know if this band is good. like telling John Richter, like, dude, I don't know if this band is good yet. Like, I don't want to webcast it.
Right.
And he and like after the first night, when I finally heard it on stage, I was like, okay, let's webcast. And that was the second night of that last run. And, you know, bringing in Robert Randolph, like, we're calling in the big guns for this. Eric Krasno, you know, Chris and Mike from Snarky Puppy, James Casey. We really leaned on my friends in the music world in a way that I haven't before to launch a project. You know,
right.
It was like, but it also wouldn't have ever made sense. Like, I don't have a project where it's like Eric Krasno and Jen Hartz would come out and, you know, and I never would feel even comfortable being like, you know, come out and, you know, play this or play this. But like the songs that we're playing in this project, everyone knows.
Yeah.
We're playing them a little differently, but everyone knows. We're going on jam cruise and like two of the songs in our set list are songs that Jen Hartswick sings beautifully and has sung many times. So it's like, hey, Jen, why don't you come out? Here's the songs we're doing. And she'll be like, I'll do this one and this one. And, you know, and that's what we're doing. We've got Jen coming out. We've got Eric playing and singing with us.
Wow.
And then you've got a whole boat full of people, literally, that we're friends with who are, you know, reaching out. Just this week, Taz reached out to us to sit in, and Roosevelt Collier reached out and said he'd love to sit in. And, you know, last week when we were going out for this last run of shows, we were just going to go out, just the four of us. And Jeremy from Pigeons reached out and said he wanted to come to the show. And I was like, oh, man, well, you might as well bring a guitar, you know?
Right.
Shira reached out and was like, she was like, man, I see you guys are playing in Fairfield. Do you mind if I sing with you? And the point being, we got in the car and the guys were like, wow, it's so cool that people are like reaching out to us, asking us to sit in with this band. And I was like, it's crazy. It's been quite the year, because I will tell you, a year ago, I called a bunch of people up and was like, I'm starting a new band. I want to get on some festivals and whatever. And like, it wasn't easy at
really?
Like Electric Forest. They put us on. Jam Cruise gave me a slot, but a lot of the people who I'm very close with and work with me all the time and trust me were like, you know, hey, can I, you know, what, can I hear it? What, you know, what's it sound like? And I'm like, don't worry, it's going to be great. You know, we're going to really kill it. And people are like, well, you know, is it going to draw? Like, who's going to come see something that nobody's ever heard before? And I was like, oh man, like, you know, I have fans that will just come.
Yeah,
they've never heard something before. Yeah. Like, but the promoters don't either know that or trust that. Or if you're starting something completely new, it's just, you know, people are weary. It's a flooded market, and there were a lot of weary people at first. And it's nice to sort of be coming around the bend from our first round of six. It's only six shows, but there was enough content and enough buzz and enough talk and enough pictures getting taken and videos getting taken. And just the nature of the internet this, you know, these days is that we came off of this and, you know, and it feels like we, you know, like we did the job, you know, to at least, you know, sort of put the lay the foundation into the ground so that we can start building this thing.
Our conversation will continue in just a bit. Off the top of the show, though, I told you about Cushco Holdings. They are, by the way, a publicly traded company under the ticker KSHB and the parent to innovative cannabis industry leaders such as Kush Supply Company, Kush Energy, The Hybrid Creative, and Coletto Packaging Solutions. They are doing amazing things aside from sponsoring our show. You should check out their website at cushco.com/podcast for more information. Now, back to the show. The biscuits do take up probably a fair amount of time. You are involved in other political projects or however you want to call them, non-political projects. You are a busy guy, and you are a master of all trades. Like, you know, before we had this call, you were busy putting out fires or making fires for the biscuits run at the end of the month. So how are you going to be able to continue and let this project grow with everything that you do around it?
Right. So I think that's a really great question. You know, first and foremost, I'm going to have to do less around it. One of the things that is true about Star Kitchen is that I opened up an incredible amount of time in my schedule when we stopped going on Conspirator tour, you know, and Conspirator, you know, played 50 or 60 shows a year when we were at our height, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. And this band was, you know, we built that. We grew Conspirator from nothing up into, like, you know, this kind of behemoth, you know, side project. For a side project to have been doing what it was doing, it was right. Huge at American festivals. We were playing in front of 5,000 to 15,000 people regularly at every festival we would go to, and doing 1,000 people in all of the major markets. But it wasn't connecting musically for me personally. And I, like, artistically, there came a point where I was like, this is taking up so much of my bandwidth. It was one of those situations where 90% of my time was being eaten up and returning 10% of the money.
Right.
And so when we shut that down, I did have an enormous amount of time on my hands over the last couple of years. And that, so Star Kitchen in a way was built to fill a void that was intentional. You know, it was sort of, at the time I thought to myself, if I open up all of this time, at some point it's going to get filled with something that, you know, makes sense. And the second part of the answer is that we put it together specifically in a way where it can be something that we can put a lot of time into. So on Mondays and Tuesdays and Wednesdays, almost always I'm here in Philly during the day with not that much to do. You know, if I don't have shows, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays are pretty open. So I found guys that are in that same situation as me. They're home. They all have kids. They're home most of the time, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And we utilize the time during the day when our kids are at school. We get together at least once a week and rehearse. And that's such a huge part of building something, is constantly being together and constantly working on new music.
And then touring with this band is kind of going to be like, you know, again, filling in spots where biscuits aren't on the road or biscuits aren't doing things on the weekend and stuff like that.
Right. Well, the biscuits only play 35 on the high end. We play 35 shows a year. So, right. You know, if that's 10 weekends, you're still looking at, you know, think of how many more weekends are open.
Yeah.
And so if I fill 20 of them, there's still another 20 weekends open, you know, to be home and or do other stuff. So the reality is my goal for this year is one weekend a month on average. So, you know, in April isn't open, so we're going to look at two weekends in March. Star Kitchen is going to play 2 weekends in May. Star Kitchen is going to play, but my goal is to do 25 shows with Star Kitchen, 2 a month, just a Friday and a Saturday. I'm not trying to go out and you know, while building a band, trying to do stuff like, you know, play Wednesdays and Thursdays and Sundays, you know, not this first year at least. Maybe we'll go out on a tour where you have to do those things just to fill dates and at some point go across the country when the buzz is there, when the music is there, when we have, you know, when we have built it up to that next level where we can, you know, afford to really even do that. I'll add some days, but the goal is to right now just do, you know, one weekend a month, move it around the Northeast, maybe down into the southeast a little, maybe out into the Midwest. Hopefully we'll find a way to do Jazz Fest, or we'll find a way to do Denver. These are our goals for the year. You know, short-term goals is keep build on what we just did, which is we went out on a great open weekend and we played two nights in not gigantic major markets and had huge nights for Star Kitchen. You know, captured the music on multi-track, got a Matrix recording, got a lot of pictures, and just got people talking about it. You know, started selling merch. So all these are little things are just the foundations. But you know, you're right. Like, you know, the biscuits are first and foremost for me. If ever the biscuits turned around and said, "Hey, we're going out on tour April, May, and June," obviously that's where I'm going.
You know? Right.
And then we're just going to have to wait until July, and then I'll start doing this again. And you know, I look at the people who are my heroes, and they don't really stop, and they're older than me. You know,
yep.
The guys in Fish are 10 years older than me, and the guys in the Dead are 30 years older than me, and they don't stop. They go from Dead and Company tour to Wolfen Brothers tour, from Terrapin Family tour to here, and then you know Fish tour to Trey tour to Ghost in the Forest tour to then Trey's on solo acoustic tour. So you know, the inspiration for working hard is right there in front of your eyes, and if you open your eyes, you see that correlation between the people who work the hardest and the people who have the most success. And so I try to draw on that inspiration and say, you know, we need to do all the things that you know, it's not a mystery how to build a band.
Right.
But the music has to connect. Like the rest of the stuff is just the stuff you do. It's always changing. There's always new technology that you can utilize. You have to stay on the forefront of the new social media apps. You have to stay on the forefront of how the apps work. You know, we've been toying around with releasing our music in 15-second snippets on our Instagram story this week.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, like, that's the best commercial there is. Just go find 15 great seconds and put a still photo behind it.
Yeah, and you're good to go.
And it's just like, and then you just write something on the story, like, this Saturday, Baltimore, dun-dun-dun-dun. It's, you know, you're basically, they're giving you the ability to make your own commercials 15 seconds long for everybody that follows you to see. So we're that's a big one for us. It's just continuously.
I don't want to keep you too much longer, but I do want to ask about the music, because right now, and to say it's covers is not fair to the musicians in the band, because these are far from covers. When Root Down, you know, goes on and on and on, and I'm not saying that, like, you know, facetiously, it goes on and on because it's killer. But when these songs are covers-ish, but are you thinking about writing original stuff, or is it the jams in between songs or during songs that's original enough for you at this point?
Well, certainly there's enough songs that we haven't learned yet that are, like, you know, in the classic funk band vernacular that we're going to get to, most of them. Like, you know, we were standing here yesterday just listening to Spotify, and I was like, oh man, ain't it funky now? Like, we got to learn that. Like, everyone that comes up, we're like, oh, we got to learn that.
Right.
I think that it wouldn't work for me if we didn't get to that middle part where we don't know exactly what we're doing, or where we do know exactly what we're doing. Like, we were playing Soul Power the other day, and then we were listening to John Scofield of Go-Go in the car. And if you listen to the Fairfield version of Soul Power on the audio archive, the second song on a Go-Go, Chink, those guys are playing it like, you know, we're much slower than how Chank goes, but they're playing the melody kind of over and over. And we had been listening to it in the car, and those guys are just computers where, like, if you hear something that day, it uploads into them, and then they can just play it like one of those weird kids that you watch on a viral video that hears a Beethoven song and then plays it note for note. That's what I've got going on with these guys. They're weird that way. They just play them something, and then they turn around and just play it back to you. So, you know, in that improvisation, I heard us playing both Soul Power and Chank at the same time. And that kind of really excited me. Like we were like mashing up two songs improvisationally without talking about it. And then we were coming from it. The funny thing is we weren't even in Soul Power yet. We were in Root Down. Yeah. So, and we never even talked about how to get from Root Down, which has an ending, and we just didn't end it. We would have ended it. We never ended it. It just made its way. Suddenly I turned and I looked at Marlon and he was playing a different beat. And I looked at him and I'm like, Soul Power. And he's like, smile, big smile. And I was like, oh my God, Marlon's got it. Like this is what we do.
Yeah.
Like he just got it. Like he just switched beats into the next song without even thinking about it. It just happened. And then I switched keys. And then when I switched keys, Danny and Rob threw in a John Scofield song for 5 minutes. And then we hit Soul Power. And it was just like everything, you know, everything that I've learned all through the years, all perfectly wrapped up and delivered, you know, by a new group of guys. So, yeah, it's that, you know, Danny came off stage at Fairfield and he's like, I got it now, man. And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, the jams. He's like, he's like, I just was repeating melodies, not soloing, repeating, doing different stuff and repeating. And he's like, I got it. I got you. I got it. I know what you're talking about. I was like, huh? And I listened back to the tape and I was like, oh, man, he's got it. We're like jamming. It wasn't just like, and even when the guitar solo was a guitar solo, the band is reacting to his notes so much that it's more like a group jam.
So really what you're doing is you and Rob are turning Marlon and Danny. You're turning them into Wooks. Basically, this is a Wook protection program or something. Like you're turning these people
What's funny was they were like talking about something that, you know, like they were like, well, we got to go da 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 da. And Rob gave me a look the other day and I silently gave him a look. I was like, they'll get it. And it was like, there was like there's the thing that Rob and I know from being like hardcore Dead and Fish fans that's different from how all the other musicians operate. It doesn't matter because music is like this visceral thing. Like it's like a language that's universal and it's all about feeling and emotion. And so if you've got it, you've got it, and then you'll get it. And Marlon and Danny both, they're on point. So they're very quickly figuring out what it is that Rob and I would like to happen musically throughout this thing. And then again, I said to Marlon at one point, like, what would you do if it was just you? And what do you want? Like, if it was just you and I was like, be you, what would you do? And he's like, I'd play this beat. So I was like, oh, do that, because that beat is nasty. And like, you know, it's like,
yeah,
if you look at the video that I posted today of People Make the World Go Round, it's like, you know, we're playing People Make the World Go Round. It sounds like Rob goes, I love this clip. It sounds like a Jimmy Smith version of People Make the World Go Round. And then suddenly it turns into like a trap style beat, you know, and it just, it's a minute long and it's on our Instagram or it's on my Instagram. And at the end of it, you just hear like Marlon drops into his thing and it's gonna, you know, it connects through the generations, you know. Awesome. It's like young kids who are into Big Gigantic and Grizz and Pretty Lights, they're going to hear that and they're going to be like, this is familiar to me, even though I might not know this song. And, you know, most of them will, because we're picking songs that have all been sampled as, you know, into mainstream, like Root Down. Everyone's like, oh, you played a Beastie Boys song. We're like, yeah, sort of. But like, that's the great thing about this music is it's so universally sampled that, you know, that everyone recognizes it. And they do research on this stuff. And it's like, if something's recognizable or familiar to people, they like it.
Yeah. Right.
You know? So we're like mashing all of these different familiar things into one thing. And I don't know. It seems like people like it. We're really pleased. You know,
it's great.
I'm surprised that outside of the Biscuits world and inside the Biscuits world, the band has been well received.
You head off to Jam Cruise. You are doing some dates with the Biscuits at the end of the month, and there's some dates in April and February. And then we'll see what's next, right? I mean, people have to follow you on social media, Star Kitchen, and we'll provide links on the website. But people have to follow you guys to sort of keep aware of what's going on, because you probably don't have the spring and the summer booked yet in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, well, we've just started to accept our dates for March. And, you know, so we do have a couple weekends in early March that Star Kitchen's looking at, you know, and then we're looking out into May after that. And cool. The Biscuits do have a bunch of stuff. Hopefully I'm going to get on a call today about Jazz Fest, and, you know, hopefully, you know, I'd love to bring Star Kitchen down there. I'm already down there for the Biscuit shows,
right.
Which are the first weekend down there, which is great. Again, like any, I'm going either way, but it's great to have Biscuits, you know, coming down and playing. And
I have a conflict. If I am thinking of coming down, but I have a conflict because J-Rad's playing the same night as your second Biscuits show.
Both shows.
Oh,
they're earlier than us.
Oh, like, okay.
You can leave. If you left J-Rad at the end of the second set, you'd be strolling in probably during our first or second song. Yeah, we're going to play till 4. They play till like 12:30.
Yeah.
Then we're going to play till 4.
Awesome. Hey, man, thanks for doing this. Really great to catch up. And we're around.
I appreciate it, man.
We're around anytime you need us to get the word out, if you want us to share stuff on social media, whatever you need, man. We're here. We're behind this project 110%. We really dig it, and we can't thank you enough for making the time.
Thank you so much for having me. Talk soon.
It's pretty exciting to hear how psyched Brownie is about this project. Here is a guy who is a jam band veteran that could probably rest on his accomplishments and his bread and butter, the Disco Biscuits, but this guy doesn't stop. You can hear how passionate he is about this project and how much time he's putting into it. Yeah, we knew we liked this guy. You can follow Star Kitchen on social media for upcoming dates and more news as it happens. Before we leave you, though, have a listen to another superb performance of Star Kitchen, again from that FTC Stage 1 performance. This time, though, it's Stevie Wonder's classic, Living for the City, featuring the awesomely talented Shira Elias on vocals.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit OsirisPod.com. Thanks for listening. Osiris.